Today what I'm going to do is to go through some mental models. One of the things that I've done personally and that I do when I teach is to have a mental model of whatever it is I'm teaching. These are transferable. It seems to be quite universal. And by mental model, all I really mean is when you start meditating, you notice the mind. And you notice all of the behaviours of the mind, the patterns of the mind. You notice things about your mind that you weren't previously aware of. We've got mental models of the mind to work with other people's minds. But our culture, because it's in denial of the mind, you're not taught about the mind at school. When was the last time you sat down with your loved ones and discussed the nature of your minds? Just doesn't happen. So it's actually taboo. People are uncomfortable talking about their minds for a start, because if you're honest, you'll be exposing all of the rubbish that goes on in your head to other people, right? So that's one thing. And the other thing is nobody does it, so you know you're going to break the ice by telling people about the flip-flops that it's been doing or whatever it happens to be for the last few days. And so what we've got is this big element of our life. It's in fact everything. Doesn't matter what you do. The mind is a key part of it. The first model is the monkey mind. So the monkey mind is the part of the mind that works against us. Having a concept like a monkey mind is a mental model. It's us realizing that there's a part of our mind that works against us. And the thing about monkeys is you don't feel like you're in the presence of an evil predator. They're mischievous. They are actually, can be frightening. And they very definitely want to get their own way. And they're not on your side. Whatever it is you've got, bananas, cameras, wallets, a nice sunny place to sit, they want it. So there's a competition there. And the chances are they'll get it because they're very smart. And so there's this part of the mind that works against us. So that really, that's the first mental model. That's the mental model that gets us into meditation in the first place. Then what happens? You sit down and you notice your thoughts. One of the things about us not having a conversation in our culture about the nature of the mind is that we don't have useful ways to describe anything. When it comes to thoughts, and this came through teaching children about meditation and mindfulness, a good way to view thoughts is like you're the driver of the bus and the thoughts are passengers. Passengers get on when they want, get off when they want. Some of them are friendly, some of them are obnoxious. For an introduction to the nature of thought, that really takes some beating. Yeah. So as the driver of the bus, what choice do you have? You have no choice about the thoughts that arise. They're over time, to be fair, the intensity and duration of the whole thinking process, and especially the uncomfortable stuff, diminishes. But you only really notice that by looking back. It's so subtle and takes so long. You notice your milestones. The mind becomes silent for the first time, that kind of thing. But overall, thought is just there. So that the bus driver analogy is a great mental model to introduce you to thought. Then you've got working with the mind. How do we work with the mind? And so there's a mental model for that. And the mental model that I use when I teach is the kitten. So has anybody ever taken delivery of a new kitten? You've got a new kitten. So first thing you have to do is house train kitty. And the way you house train kitty is she pees, you pick her up, you put her in the litter tray. If you come into a room and she's peed in this corner and she's guiltily skulking around in the other corner, What you do is you pick her up, you take her over to the pea, you show her the pea, you say, look, you did that. And then you take her to the litter tray. That's gentle repetition. You're repeating something over and over again. You're not aggressive about it. There's no conflict. You just repeat it, repeat it, repeat it, repeat it. That's how we train the mind. Gentle repetition, same thing over and over again. That's why we need to invest the time in meditation. We need to invest the time in mental practice to get the mind to a better place. There's another mental model. And then after a while, we get to the mind itself, and how do you model the mind? And really, it's so incredibly complex. There's no way that it's possible to impose a model of the mind that doesn't articulate all that complexity. And the complexity can appear random, but there are patterns. The mental model that I use for the mind, if you want to understand, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? Why do I feel this way? Why am I thinking this? Or somebody else, why are they doing this? The way I look at it is, it's like an ocean planet. We've all seen those photographs of Earth from space. If you get a photograph of the Pacific, it's almost all ocean. So it's easy for us to imagine that you've got all this ocean, right? The mind is infinitely more complex than any ocean. Yeah. So the brain's got 80 billion neurons. And in between the neurons, there are axons, which are connections. So those 80 billion neurons, they have between 1 and 10,000 connections. And in the connections are things called synapses, which are like tiny little switches. So if you multiply all the possible alternative states of the brain, this is just the brain we're talking about, it gives you a number that's bigger than the net sum of all the fundamental particles in the universe. And it's not just a little bit bigger either. I dug these numbers out, and the number of possible permutations in the brain is twice as many digits as there are all the fundamental particles in the universe. So it's crazily complex. What we need is to model it in a helpful way. And you notice all of these models, they've got something about them, which is there's no scary bits. If the Victorians, they had a very dark concept of the mind. If you look at something like Beauty and the Beast and Jekyll and Hyde. And so Jekyll and Hyde's the perfect example. The Gothic novel was all about man's struggle, well, mankind's they meant, but, well, maybe they just meant man. Man's struggle, yeah, who cares about women, eh, if you're Victorian era. Man's struggle with the beast within. This pops up all the time in all of these Gothic novels. And it was a kind of accepted reality that your willpower overcame your animal instincts or it didn't. And it's really unhelpful, false dichotomy, black and white thinking, not useful. Our culture has maintained a lot of that, tragically. And one of the areas that it does that really unhelpfully is in the area of personality. So here's an unhelpful mental model. You have character deficits and you have character virtues. This is virtuous behaviour. Good character, this is bad behaviour, bad character. If you're indulging in something, you are weak. And the whole thing is about overcoming that weakness with discipline. And discipline has to be hard for it to work. And so subsequently, that's one of the reasons we're in the mess that we're in with the mind and why we don't even discuss it. Because this is built into the culture. Right thinking, wrong thinking. To be fair, it exists in Buddhism as well. right thinking and wrong thinking. So it's better to bin all of that, because it's not going to help you work with your mind. You can believe it if you want. You can do these personality tests. You can look at the world like that if you want. But it's not helpful if you want to work with your mind. So the mental model of the ocean planet, what you have on the surface, what you're aware of, weather, wind, waves, rain, clouds, that's there. And so sometimes it's a sunny day, sometimes it's a cloudy day, and that's it. And there are currents. These are the instincts. Instinctual behaviour comes first every single time. If there's ever a conflict, the more extreme the conflict between your behavioural choices, the more likely instinct is to take over. And it's designed to do that. It's designed to shut down your thinking processes, literally, so that you just act based on emotion. And emotion is your body telling you what to do. That's what emotion is. It's a message. Body telling you what to do. And they're there all the time. And then habit is the next thing. There's a thing that they talk about a lot, which is intelligence, and I seriously doubt it actually exists. There is very little that human beings do that can't actually be seen as some sort of hive behaviour. People in different cultures do completely different things. It's just about what we've learned. So all we've got is instinct and what we've learned. And our intelligence is really, it's a measure of our ability to operate in the culture and the society that we've created. So that this whole thing is an extension of some visual models that we can use to help us to work with a mind and help us to get comfortable with it. It's all about getting comfortable with it, because that's the purpose of meditation, to become familiar and comfortable with the mind. And you notice all of these models, they're quite fuzzy, because the mind is fuzzy. We want it to be clear, black and white. You know, you do this, then this happens. You do that, then that happens. And it's not. So we're working with something that's quite fuzzy. The purpose of all of these is for us to get comfortable, familiar and comfortable with it. There's another model that I've devised, which is, imagine you've got a tree in a pot. The mind is the tree. Above the ground, that's everything you're aware of. Below the ground is the roots. Effectively, in the mind, the roots of the mind are beliefs. What you believe is true. And we need that in order to be able to navigate our reality. But unfortunately, we're all pot-bound. So if you've ever seen a pot-bound plant, you pull it out and you think, well, where's all the soil gone? It's just roots everywhere. And that pot, that's our cultural beliefs. What you're doing by meditating is you've broken the pot. You've broken the pot. The cultural beliefs of the mind in our culture, which is very, very limited, and in fact, there's a big element of just don't go there, don't talk about it. You break the pot, and then you plant that tree in the ground. And then the roots are going to go wherever they're going to go. That's actually a difficult process. The other way to get the plant out of the pot is by cutting the roots. So you either break the pot and you think to yourself, okay, I need to start from a place where I don't believe anything until I actually know it's true personally in my personal experience, and to hell with all the rest of it. Or you work on those beliefs one by one, and you'll find yourself doing that whether you like it or not. And what you're doing is not, oh, that belief's wrong, I need to adjust it. What you're discovering is what isn't absolutely true. So it's as if it gets cleared away altogether. And you'll discover that in your practice. You'll get recognitions, realizations, things will arise in your mind and you become lighter. The burden of all the things you believe diminishes. It isn't about changing beliefs so that they are good beliefs instead of bad beliefs. Think about that, the old false dichotomy. Instead, do I absolutely know this is true? You know, here's the first one you need to start off with. I'm not good enough, which is an almost universal perception. Is that absolutely true? And the answer is no way ever. You're creating a comparison in your head to deny your worth and value. And that's almost universal in our culture. We compare ourselves. We're comparing ourselves based on what we've learned, which is everything within that pot. Break the pot, ask yourself the question, so who am I comparing myself with? And you know nothing about the contents of somebody else's mind. Zilch, zero. You can work with somebody, you can help them, but you still don't know. They're not going to tell you. Yeah. So you get comfortable with the mind, use these models. I'll put this on a podcast. It can be a scary thing until you get comfortable with it. It's like a new neighbour. You need to get familiar, comfortable with the neighbour. When you get to know them, it's all right, actually. They might seem very difficult at first. So getting to know the mind, really the best way to start is by sitting and focusing on the breath. So what we'll do is we'll start off with following the breath today. And all you need to do with those mental models is now forget them. Because the ones that are relevant to you, they'll be checked into your memory anyway. So you just forget everything I just said. If it's useful for you, it will stick. And you can notice the breath. The main place is the nostrils or the belly. If you relax, help to relax your body by putting your elbows by your side and your head balanced as comfortably as you can on top of your shoulders. It'll help if you've had a busy week, which is what most of us have most of the time. It'll help if you place your thumb and forefinger in contact. Just gently in contact. And allow yourself to be aware of the breath. And the reason we're doing this is because we want to learn about the currents of the mind. So let's say you're trying to map a new ocean and all you have is a boat. The only way to do so is by going out on it. And then what you'll do is you'll learn where the currents are. You'll learn about the wind and the waves. You'll become more and more of an expert at navigating the ocean, coping with the weather and the currents.
And all you do is keep coming back to the breath over and over again. So that's the only thing you need to do. Coming back to the breath. And the mind will do whatever the mind does in the background. Cool breath in, warm breath out. So it's not a competition. You're not trying to remain focused on the breath. All you're doing is coming back to it when your mind has wandered. Just noticing the sensation of the breath, the rising and falling. If your mind is challenging today, you can use the mantra and repeat in your mind as you breathe in and breathe out. You say in your mind, rising, falling, rising, falling. Check in with your shoulders, head and face. Is there any tension there? If there is, you're breathing in, breathing out, relaxing, starting at the eyebrows, face, cheeks, shoulders, down to your fingers, down to your toes. We're letting out the tension on the out-breath. And then back to noticing the breath. cool in breath, warm out breath. Rising, falling. Relationship to the breath is like you're sitting on a beach, you're watching the waves. Noticing the waves rolling up, washing away. Any tension in the body, let it go with an out breath. And we're just back to noticing the breath. Breathing in, noticing what you can smell and taste. Maybe wiggling your toes, gently return your attention to the room. So there's the first two mental models, right? It's the thoughts. You're the bus driver, thoughts pop up. They're there for a while, they go away. They're there for a while, they go away. There's the kitten. Gently returning the kitten to the litter tray. Your mind wanders. You're gently returning your attention to the breath. Repeat, repeat, repeat. And then what will happen is over time you'll become more aware of being unaware. So there's a great definition of mindfulness, which is it's awareness of unawareness. It's the moment of recognition, that moment that you realise that your mind's been wandering and that you weren't actually here. You're able to bring your attention back to now. So that's what we're repeating in that meditation. We want to repeat the moment of recognition over and over again till it becomes a habit, and so then that happens in our day. And what that means is when we lose focus in our day, or when our mind draws us into somewhere that's unhelpful, we become aware of that, we can bring our attention back to now. So there's no competition really, it's just that there's a habit, there's an ocean current that draws the mind to the place that it tends to be drawn to. It's path dependence is how most of our reality is. Things happen because they happen. People do things because they do things. And it just comes over and over and over and over again. This is the hive mentality at work. And our mind is a little reflection of that. Our mind does things over and over and over again. We often get to the point where we've forgotten why we do it. And the habits that the mind gets into, they're fairly similar. When I speak to people about their inner experiences, what I get back is fairly similar. So what we're doing is we're working in the areas where it's universal. The moment of recognition is universal. Mind wandering is universal. Thought is universal. Emotion is universal. And to an extent, the way they interact is universal. So not all emotions initiate thoughts, but all thought has an emotional element. Yeah. Knowing that, you can then be aware of why you can be thinking about one thing when you're actually feeling differently. And this is also explains why having happy thoughts doesn't resolve how you feel. It can have an effect. It can have an effect, but the emotion is like it's a current, and it's repeated, repeated, repeated. So what will happen once you've meditated like that often enough that your mind becomes calm? Meditation then just becomes an experience of allowing yourself to be aware of all of your inner experience. The thoughts, the emotions, the sense of experiences, intuition, choice, memories, scenarios, where we're constructing some imaginary future scenario in our head. These are all the inner experience. Best way to look at it is like an ocean. And what you're looking for is the currents on the ocean. In your practice, what you're looking for is the practices that will help you move you from one current to another. So here's one. So I don't know if I taught this last week. This is a personal practice. It's my personal pranayama. Don't do it now. I'll explain it first and then you can try it, see if it works for you. What you do is you breathe in through the nostrils. You're breathing into top of the head, the area behind the eyes, the top of the nostrils, whatever it happens to be. And it takes me about 3 seconds to do that. And what happens is it fills your lungs. Just before you go and dive in the water, you know, yeah, you fill your lungs and your rib cage is full of air. And then what I do is I just relax my shoulders. I don't breathe out. So breathing in, tightening the chest, filling the lungs, and then just relax my shoulders. And the breath tumbles out on its own. Give it a go. It's got reasonable amount of approval in the other places that I teach. So you breathe in, fill your lungs. You can hold it or you can just do it straight away and then you just relax your shoulders. And what you'll notice is that a lot of tension goes out of the body. The out-breath tumbles out all on its own. But you don't feel the need to breathe in straight away. There's a little pause. So in, tight chest, full lungs, and then just relax your shoulders. And most people do that 3 or 4 times, and they're changing their state. What you're doing is you're moving from one current, which is whatever stress there is in your life right now, and that's expressed as tension in the body, and then you're just hopping over onto another current, which is relaxation. All the pranayamas work like this. The 4-6 breaths, box breaths, this practice, anything where you're extending the out breath, you're moving your physiology from stress to relaxation. We'll do the 4-6 breaths, pranayama, move over to relaxation. The way to do it is for you to count the in-breaths in your head. You count 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000, 4-1000. And then you count the out-breath. 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000, 4-1000, 5-1000, 6-1000. For it to be effective, you really need to be in a relaxed posture. Ideally, elbows by the side, head balanced on top of the spine. Breathing in for 4 seconds, 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000, 4-1000. Breathing out for 6 seconds, 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000, 4-1000, 5-1000, 6-1000. Then straight back into the in-breath. The thing to focus on is for the breath to be as smooth as possible. So you're not looking to completely fill your lungs or completely empty them or any such. All you're looking at is making the breath as smooth as you can. And now what we're going to do is focus our attention on the sensation in the forehead. If you can't feel anything in your forehead, what you do is you just place your palm very, very close to the forehead without actually touching it. And you get a feeling of warmth and a tingling. And so for this meditation, the best posture is sitting comfortably as you can. Comfort comes first before you do any of these. Then elbows by the side, skull balanced comfortably on top of the spine. Tongue up against the back of the top teeth, so it's in contact with the sharp part of the bottom teeth. If you're comfortable with it, thumb and forefinger very gently in contact. And you're allowing yourself to notice whatever sensations there are in your forehead. And becoming aware of the space between your eyes. Breathing in normally, breathing out, relaxing the forehead, eyebrows, eyes and cheeks. Just being aware of the space between your eyes when you do this. Breathing in normally, breathing out, forehead, eyebrows, eyes and cheeks. Just like successive waves of relaxation moving down your face. Breathing in normally, tongue up against the sharp part of the teeth. Breathing out, relaxing mouth and lips, jaw and throat. All on the out breath. Just letting the tension and tightness, pressure and stress out. moving your attention, breathing in normally, breathing out, relaxing the back and sides of the neck and shoulders. Just letting the tension and tightness out on successive out-breaths. Breathing in normally, breathing out, gently relaxing your hands. Same with the eyes, jaw, shoulder. Downward, down from the wrists, down to the tips of the fingers. Just letting all the tension out of the hands. And breathing in normally, breathing out, relaxing the eyes, jaw, shoulders, down to the tips of your fingers, down to your feet, and into the floor. So each out breath is like a wave of relaxation moving down the body. Eyes, jaw, shoulders, hands, feet, and into the floor. Breathing in normally, noticing what you can smell and taste, and the sensation of sitting. And gently return your attention to the room. So all these currents in the ocean of the body and the mind, they're layered on top of each other. The deepest layer is instinct. The reason that you feel better now is because there was tension. And the tension comes from an instinctual response. It's the stress response. We respond to a perceived threat or a difficulty with the stress response. And that builds musculoskeletal tension. You didn't even notice it happening. But when you came into this room, you had this stress. And probably over the week, maybe the day, maybe the month, maybe the year, there it is. And so there it is. There's this current of physiological stress. And that's underriding everything. So what we've done is we've hopped onto another current, which is a relaxation current, and we're unwinding a lot of the work that's been done by the stress. So you've got your physiology. That's the deepest level. Emotion, that's the next thing, and then thought on top of that. Oh, and there's habit. Yeah. So habit can work at all of those levels. So you can get a habit of having an emotional response to something. Yeah. Break that pot. Don't need it. You don't need it because it's called a trigger. Yeah. There's 8 million of them walking around London right now. Right. And you only need to ask yourself the question, yeah. And the question is, what's happening right now that is difficult? What's happening right now that's difficult? Right now. What's happening right now? There's nothing difficult happening now. Right.
but you don't have to answer it. Just keep asking yourself that. The repetition from the mindfulness meditations bring you to an awareness of your psychological and physiological state at times during the day, and then you need to use those times wisely to intervene in, especially in the currents that are unhelpful for your happiness. And in a habit and emotion are a couple of them. I mean, one of the interesting things is about a habit is you notice that you're repeating the habit and you know that it's unhelpful and you don't need another cookie, glass of wine, and you do need to go to the gym and so on and so forth, and you'd carry on anyway. Okay, so don't worry about that. That's all work itself out in time. But the other things is like, what's emotion there? What emotion is there? When we're on autopilot, we can be going along with a load of resentment, for example, or anger, or whatever it happens to be, and not even be aware of it. And then that's affecting our physiology, it's affecting our thoughts, it colours the thoughts. The thoughts aren't necessarily angry thoughts, because something angry happened this morning. It could be thoughts about other things, but they're all interlinked, all at different layers in the ocean of the mind. So the easiest way to intervene quickly is with the deepest layer, which is your physiology, which is, generally speaking, tipped over into the stress mode, and you want to get it back to the relaxation mode. Also calms your mind. Calming the body calms the mind. Also, the emotions, lower duration, less intensity. Okay, so what we do now is we will do a couple of the meditations that people find the most useful for calming their mind. So if your mind's not calm, relax your body. When you've relaxed your body, you want your mind to be as calm as you can. And the best one is called counting the breaths. This works for 50% of meditators. If you find this uncomfortable, you can just do following the breath. So if you're one of the 50% that it makes your mind busier, let's not you do that. Instead, you do following the breath, or you do labeling the thoughts, whatever works for you. But if you haven't done it for a while, give it a go. Counting the breaths, we're waiting for the next breath. Waiting for a breath to arise. Breath arises, we count one on the in-breath, two on the out-breath. Three on the in-breath, four on the out-breath. Up to 10. Get to 10, begin at 1. Lose count, begin at 1. So that's one on the in-breath, two on the out-breath, three on the in-breath, four on the out-breath, up to 10. Get to 10, begin at 1. If you lose count, begin at 1. And the relationship to the breath is you're just waiting for it. Waiting for it, and when it happens, you count it. So we have a tendency to cause the breath to happen. If you're waiting for the breath, less likely to happen. Okay, now we move straight into labeling the thoughts.
waiting for a thought, same way we were waiting for the breath, waiting for a thought to arise. And when a thought arises, just label it in our mind, thinking. And we're back to waiting for the next thought. Thought arises, label it using the inner voice, say thinking, back for the next thought, repeat. If this is uncomfortable for you, if you prefer counting the breaths, you can continue with that. Or if you prefer following the breath, you can do that. So again, in your very own time, okay, so there you go, so there's some mental models.